The Athletic.
Totally Football Show, European edition. Today, Champions League quarterfinals. Are PSG going to PSG the league away? And how will they fare against Bayern? Mandatory Basque rule. We hear about the Real Athletic final. And Haaland notes, what could he go for in the summer transfer market? We'll be talking about all that and more in this Totally Football Show in association with Paddy Power. Hello, listener, and thank you so much for joining us here on the Totally Football Show on what is for us, well, Monday, April the 5th, to be absolutely honest, but by the time this gets to you, well, Tuesday, April the 6th. With us today on Totally, we've got Julien Laurens. Hi, Jules.
Hi, James. Hi, everyone.
Alvaro Romeo also on board. Hello, Alvaro.
Hello, James. How are you?
I'm very well, thank you. And Raphael Honigstein's here too. Hi, Raph.
Hello, James.
Nice to see you. James Horncastle is off, but don't worry, it's Champions League quarterfinals week, so not a big one for Italian football. We're just coming back off the international break. Any big stories? Any major things we should be discussing? Rafa, anything particular happened with Germany that we should maybe...
No.
Was it Bielefeld's 1-1 draw with Mainz?
Possibly so. Possibly. No, but what's been the fallout to that North Macedonia defeat?
Oh, that's not even the biggest game this week. But the fallout is that all the goodwill and positivity that might have existed towards Joachim Löw has all dissipated into the thin spring air. And now you'll have 2 months of people thinking, oh, no, it's going to be a disaster again. Some cause even for him to go now. I don't think that's realistic, but shows you just how demoralizing, I think, for everyone concerned this defeat was and the manner of the performance. But we've had bigger games since, James. 2 massive games at the top of the table that are season-defining.
Right. Okay.
If you want to learn more.
Mm-hmm. Let's do that. Let's begin with our traditional round of moments of the weekend. And go on, Rafa, you lead us off. Moments of the weekend, of course, with Paddy Power.
Well, there were 2, and it's very difficult to choose between them because 2 absolutely seminal goals for the season. 1 by Leon Goretzka to edge the thriller between Bayern and Leipzig and give Bayern a 7-point lead, which feels like the championship is won again for the 9th time. But just as importantly, for other reasons, the late header from André Silva past Marvin Hitzing goal from Dortmund, giving Frankfurt the win and a 7-point gap in 4th spot ahead of Dortmund with all sorts of repercussions.
Right. All sorts of repercussions we'll be discussing later, potentially for Erling Haaland's future with the club. Alvaro, your moments of the weekend.
I would have preferred not to say this, but Real Sociedad is the cup winner in Spain. They won their first title since 1987, so congratulations to them for winning the Spanish Cup final. And there is another thing that it is pretty relevant in the title race. Barcelona, for the first time in a long time, 3-4 months, they depend on their own results to be La Liga champions because Atlético de Madrid lost against Sevilla. So if Barcelona wins every game available, they will be La Liga champion for the first time since 2019.
Huge, absolutely huge. Jules, what about you?
It has to be Jonathan David's goal for Lille at the Parc des Princes against PSG for a Lille win, which takes them top of the table, 3 points clear of PSG.
Jonathan Ikoné, le centre retrait pour David, justement, qui a le temps! Qui a le temps d'ajuster et d'inscrire le premier but! Il était touché! Jonathan David, mais c'est lui!
They were fantastic all through the game, which was the complete opposite for PSG, but they played so well. And Jonathan David, who I guess is a good example of what they're doing at that club in terms of trading and business model, with a goal that could be huge at the end of the season.
Absolutely, Jules. Hey, here's a quick question from HP at Adam Diver 9. 4 of Lille's 11 starters were PSG Academy players. Yeah. How does this happen?
Yeah, that's right. And then I think when Jonathan David came off after an injury, not long after his goal, Timothy Weah came on to replace him. We had 5 former PSG players out of 11 on the pitch for Lille. It's just that they took the opportunity to sign those players. Jonathan Ikone, for example, who went on loan there first, who'd done really well for them, won his French Cup while with Lille. Mac Maignan in goal, again, who would not have played much or not enough for his liking in Paris, so moved to Lille. Boubacary Soumaré as well in midfield, who was fantastic in the game, who left the club before signing his first professional contract, so left on a free. And as we said, Timothy Weah as well, who came on for Joe David. And then there's another one probably that I'm missing.
Plus, they produced so many good players in the city of Paris that you couldn't fit them all into PSG. It's understandable, no?
No, you're right. Although I think it's a bigger debate, and not one for now, on the club's identity and how you keep the best one. It's not just keeping them. It's also spotting the good one. Let's not forget that they missed out on Kylian Mbappe when he was 13, who chose to go to Monaco instead of coming to PSG. That's the one they don't see. The one they see but choose to go somewhere else. And then they're the ones who leave either very early or for a little money or for free. So it's a very fascinating subject, I think. And clearly, on Saturday, he came back to haunt them because all those former PSG graduates did a lot of damage to this PSG team.
The ones that get away and become TV journalists in London. Yeah. Well, we're going to hear about all of that and much more. But let's start off with the big games coming up Tuesday and Wednesday, the Champions League quarterfinals.
The Totally Football Show European Edition's Moment of the Weekend, brought to you by Paddy Power. Defences may be looking shaky at the moment, but Paddy's offers are rock solid. If one leg of your 4+ fold ACCA lets you down, get a free bet. Max free bet £10, minimum odds 1 to 5 per leg, online exclusive, no shop bets. T's and C's apply, 18 plus, begambleaware.org.
Tuesday in the Champions League, Man City get a visit from Borussia Dortmund, and Real Madrid host Liverpool. Woof. Alvaro, it's a rematch of the 2018 Champions League final. Sadly, this time, there's no Sergio Ramos. And that is sad for Real Madrid because they've lost 7 of their past 10 games in the Champions League that they've played without him. This is an absolutely huge 10 days for Real Madrid. No, you've got 2 legs against Liverpool and bang in the middle, El Clásico.
Yeah, sadly for Real Madrid, Lloris Iscariot is not playing for Liverpool too, has to be said. But yeah, as you said, I mean, this is the season-defining moment for Real Madrid. I remember very well that final in Kiev. Many things have changed for Real Madrid ever since then, especially Cristiano Ronaldo departing. But Real Madrid is in a good moment coming into this game. They haven't lost a game since January. And I do believe that against Liverpool, the key is going to be to keep control of the game. If the game accelerates a little bit, that's going to benefit Liverpool. Toni Kroos, Modric and Casemiro probably will have to do their possible best to control the pace of the game, because otherwise this may be a little bit difficult for Real Madrid. Both teams have their own problems, we are aware of that, but this weekend both showed very positive signs. Real Madrid beat Eibar comfortably, and Liverpool beat Arsenal also with a clean sheet. So I think that this is one of the most difficult tires to make a prediction.
Rafa, Liverpool got that 3-week break that we were talking about, and they certainly looked much improved on Saturday.
Yeah, they did. Me and Jules were lucky enough to be at the Emirates, although maybe I was luckier than him to see the game. Liverpool very, very strong. Arsenal very, very poor. But maybe just signs that the, you know, much maligned defence is beginning to work for them. I thought Kabak and Phillips had a good game together. It was the 4th clean sheet in a row up front. It was one of those weird games when none of the strikers actually had a particularly good game. I mean, the starting ones. But Mo Salah still ends up being absolutely vital. And of course, the inclusion of Diego Jota really paid off for Jurgen Klopp. I wonder if he's going to go with all 4 of them, maybe from the start, because Liverpool look better with that extra man up front against the Real Madrid team without Sergio Ramos, who might be a bit vulnerable.
That would be bold, no? Away in Madrid with 4 up front?
They did it at City, so they can do it. Real Madrid, I guess, you know, but certainly when Jota came on, I mean, Liverpool were very good before that, but when he came on and we saw with Rafa, we were on the side of Klopp's bench, and Klopp clearly called Salah to come over and said, this is a 4-2-4 now, you know, we'll have the 2 in midfield and then you, Jota, Firmino a bit deeper and then Mane. And I think that worked for the time being, and then he took off Firmino because there was no need, they were already 2-0 up or something. But I would love it if he starts like that against Real Madrid, because I do think that if you do that And if you've got Firmino in the Casemiro area, Casemiro will have to think far more about defending than attacking. And we know how, funnily enough, how important he's been going forward for Real Madrid this season, either with goals or with shots or strikes that then created chances or a goal for Real Madrid. So if you force Casemiro of almost purely defending the whole time because he will have Firmino on his shoulder the whole time, I think that takes a lot away from the way Real Madrid have been playing the last few months.
That said, Saturday they were facing a team that barely made it out of their own half in the first 45 minutes at least, against a Real Madrid side who have Benzema in exceptional form. What is it, 9 goals in the last 7? Who've got Marco Asensio scoring 3 in his last 3. As I say, it does sound a bold move. Alvaro, your take.
I think that Benzema is going to be a goal guarantee for Real Madrid. The problem with Real Madrid is that this season you don't know who is the second best scoring source for Real Madrid. Could he be Marco Asensio? Well, that's still to be proven, because Asensio is a very inconsistent player. I think that the factor of Vinicius can play a part as well, because he's a player who has a certain unpredictability that it is very good for Real Madrid sometimes, because otherwise they are a bit flat. And I would like to say something about Ramos very quickly. I mean, the mismanagement of his recovery with the Spanish national team has been terrible. And Real Madrid now are facing the most important game of the season without Sergio Ramos, as you well said. And I want to remember, and I want to remind you, that last season in the Champions League at the Etihad, Rafael Varane had to play, basically playing the ball from the back himself, and he suffered a lot from that. So I think that Sergio Ramos is very important to ease off the pressure and to make sure that you play from the back very well. And not having Sergio Ramos, that's going to make it difficult for Real Madrid to play the ball from the back. So if Liverpool pushes hard, maybe Real Madrid is going to have some trouble there trying to play from the back.
Meanwhile, the Clásico coming up before the second leg of this, and the title race really heating up again in La Liga, with Atletico losing this time at Sevilla, which leaves Real Madrid just 3 points behind them. And Barcelona, who play Monday night after we record this, by the time this reaches you, listener, they could be only 1 point off the top with a game in hand. Alvaro.
Yeah, that's a novelty for Barcelona this season, really. But Atletico de Madrid, they screwed up lately so badly. I mean, let's not forget that in the first half of the season, they got 50 points. That didn't mean that they were champions, but of course, it was theirs to win the title. And now Barcelona, as I said before, it's down to them to win the title. If they manage to get a win in El Clásico, then they have to play still against Atletico de Madrid. So that game at the Camp Nou against Atletico de Madrid is going to be probably a title decider. So the good thing about Barcelona is that they put themselves in that situation.
As for Real, meanwhile, figures make it look like they're kind of back to their best now. 9 wins, I think, in the last 11, unbeaten in that run. But have they actually faced anybody? Is this another level of adversary for them, Alvaro?
Yes, it is. I believe that in the Champions League they didn't find that opposition with Atalanta, because the first game was obviously so marked by that quick send-off by an Atalanta player. And I think that they found a very difficult opposition against Atletico de Madrid about a month ago. But Liverpool is something else, because Liverpool in the Champions League, they've been really good this season. Maybe in the Premier League we know that they have had their deficiencies, but in the Champions League they have managed to be still one of the best teams in Europe. So probably Real Madrid is going to encounter and face that version of Liverpool. So yes, this is definitely the biggest test that Real Madrid has had, definitely in 2021.
Crikey. All right, well, the other game going on Tuesday, competing for our attention, is Man City against Dortmund. Man City are fresh this weekend from one of their most imperious displays of the season, away at Leicester. Dortmund, not so much, Rafa. Dortmund in that game, which you referenced before, at home to Eintracht Frankfurt, the big playoff for fourth place, and it didn't go well for them.
No, it went terribly, and they were so disappointing that even the club hierarchy, the bosses, especially Hans-Joachim Watzke, the CEO, had a real go at the team, saying he can no longer defend the team. It was just basically beyond the pale, the way they played. They created some chances. They scored a goal, but ultimately it was the whole season rolled into 90 minutes, whereby they looked a little bit immature in attack. Lots of easy balls being misplaced, not quite the right decision in the final third, looking very pretty but very hapless. And at the back, lack of concentration and conceding 2 goals. And that late goal from André Silva, which condemned them to defeat. was not just the 3 points, but probably means that they'll have to do without the Champions League next season for the first time since that last year under Jurgen Klopp in 14-15. That year, of course, brought a big reconstruction of the club with new players coming in and with Thomas Tuchel coming in. And something similar is going to happen next year with Marco Rose coming in. But of course, you'd love to transform the team and add and strengthen from a position of financial strength rather than losing a lot of money. Corona itself will cost them another 50, maybe 60 million euros of losses. That's net. So after everything, conceded, they will lose money as they did last season. And then, of course, not being in a Champions League would, depending on what they do, how well they perform, could at least be 30 million, but maybe up to 70 million euros worse off. So it's a really killer blow.
Mm. If only there was a way for them to easily bank a lot of cash this summer.
You say easily, but I think that the money that they would like for Erling Haaland is not going to be affordable for many clubs, perhaps not any in this current climate. I think Dortmund wouldn't mind selling Jadon Sancho for 100 million or so, with Haaland, him having a release clause next season for 75 million euros. That's never been confirmed, but it's a figure that's not really being disputed. Dortmund have said, we will do this only if somebody comes and offers us to double that money now, this summer. And I think they believe that no one's going to be in a position to do so. And they are reasonably confident that they can keep him and also that he won't try to force his way out the way that one or two players have done in the past in a similar situation.
Even if they're not in the Champions League next season?
Well, it'll be, of course, a huge embarrassment. It'll increase the pressure, if you will, to sell from Haaland's point of view. I think he probably doesn't want to be there. But at the same time, Haaland has a very clear pathway out of this club that is available next season. And I think it'll be fairly easy for him, his agent, his father to understand that it might be even financially in their interest to stick around, because any of that money saved on, the fee that would have to be paid this year is going to find his way back to the player.
Right.
So, yes, Europa League is annoying, etc. But I think Dortmund, or the market mechanism, if you will, will find a way to make it a little bit easier for him.
Okay, well, you might want to tell his agent, Mino Raiola, and his dad that, because they're off doing a tour of La Liga and various other places, and no doubt will use the clash with Man City as well to wave at a few Man City executives. What was behind the jaunt around Barcelona and Real Madrid for Haaland's representatives last week?
Look, this has not come as a surprise to Dortmund. Before he set off, or before they set off to Spain, they had a meeting with Dortmund just to understand where Dortmund's position is. And they set off with the knowledge that this is not about trying to sound out any buyers directly. This is about talking to the club, looking at the training ground, trying to understand what is the position of Barcelona. Are they really going to construct a new team, or are they going to be very cash-strapped? What are Real Madrid's plans for next season? It was much more a fact-finding mission, if you will. Of course, the fact that it was all done in public made it look not so good and annoyed people, of course. But it wasn't an actual sales pitch, if you will, or them sort of already going deep into those financial details. And that's not going to happen for a while, I think.
Alvaro, what kind of facts do you think Mino and Haaland Senior discovered on this trip?
Well, I think that they definitely knew already that Barcelona and Real Madrid, they've got their financial struggles. For Raiola, it would have been very easy just to disguise this meeting with Laporta because they are good friends and they have a contact. So they could easily say, yes, we've spoken about a number of things and Erling Haaland was one of them, fine. But nothing definitive has been agreed, of course. And Barcelona has so many issues to resolve before they can go to the market and get a player of that caliber and that price. Because Lionel Messi's future, if this is decided already, he is the only one who knows. Messi, as you well know, he takes a huge chunk of Barcelona's salaries in total. That, as per Barcelona, when it comes to Real Madrid, there is an aspiration at Real Madrid to unveil the new ground, which is not in a different place, in Santiago Bernabeu, but there has been a remodelation, to unveil the new ground with a brand new player, and the best one they can. But for that, Real Madrid, who has managed to mitigate the impact of the pandemic losses much better than Barcelona, for that Real Madrid will have to sell. So, and the dream for Real Madrid has been Mbappé, or that has been published in the Madrid papers. So it's still a little bit early to say, really. And Pep Guardiola said last Friday as well that, for example, Manchester City didn't see themselves in the position to sign a player like Haaland or to cash a lot of money for a player. So I think that if Manchester City cannot afford a player like that, probably Barcelona and Real Madrid are going to struggle too.
All right. Although a club pleading poverty ahead of transfer negotiations wouldn't be the strangest thing in the world. But I very much take your point. About this game then, on Tuesday, Haaland hasn't scored in four games now, Rafa. Three of those were for Norway, but still, there's no Jadon Sancho. What chance do you give Dortmund of springing a surprise on City, who've never been past the quarterfinals, let's remember, since Pep Guardiola took charge?
I'd love to be very optimistic and hopeful about Dortmund's chances, but their performance was so poor. And I think the lack of, or the loss of Jadon Sancho weighs quite heavily on them as far as the counter-attacking chances are concerned, that I think it's going to be very, very difficult. If they can keep this tie alive after the first leg, I think that will already be seen as a success. It's going to be really difficult. They're not happy. Marco Reus, the captain, had a bit of a hissy fit going off as a substitute with 10 minutes to go. Haaland has looked very unhappy. He's been shaking his head and throwing his hands up in the air, you know, kind of saying, what is happening here? These people around me are not good enough, giving off these kind of vibes. So it's not really the ideal state of mind, confidence, form, whatever you want to call it, to go into this game. I wish I could be slightly more positive, but I fear that it might all be over after the first leg.
Certainly sounds like Haaland's very happy to be sticking around for another year and waiting for a release clause there. Anyway, we shall see what develops. Now, whoever gets through that tie will be facing the winner of the Bayern Paris Saint-Germain clash. Oof, we're going to be talking about that very shortly. But next, it's the All-Basque Copa del Rey final.
We're sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally. This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Alvaro, the 2020 Copa del Rey final, almost a year on, they finally played it. It was the first ever All Basque affair. And yes, Real Sociedad winning 1-0 with their only shot on target from the penalty spot. Gutting for you. Who knows how long you'll have to wait to play in another cup final with Athletic Bilbao.
Yeah, and who knows? Real Sociedad are going to be the shortest defending champions ever because, you know, the next final is in 14 days between Athletic de Bilbao and Barcelona. But it wasn't a very good game, James. I have to say, especially for Athletic Bilbao fans, it was very upsetting. But the game itself, when it comes to the quality, you could really tell that both teams, they were nervous. They didn't want to lose the final. But at the end of the day, Real Sociedad were more themselves than Athletic de Bilbao were, especially in the second half. And as it happens in many games, it is quality more than physicality what decides a nail-beating game. And I think that Mikel Merino's pass to Porto in the action that ended up being a penalty was the only beautiful action of the game. That changed the game completely. He delineated a perfect pass for Porto. Oyarzabal scored the goal, and he was very nervous before taking the penalty because Oyarzabal had missed three penalties since March, so it was a very, very difficult moment for him, but he managed to score. And Real Sociedad made history. They won their first title since 1987. And I was, upset to see my club losing another final because we have lost four cup finals since 2009, plus a Europa League final in 2012. But, it was a beautiful tribute for Basque football, I have to say. I want to go for that take because I am in the losing side. And there were 32 players from the Basque country in the match day squad between Real Sociedad and Athletic de Bilbao. So if you think that the Basque country is a 2 million inhabitant region, that's quite something. Having reached a final for both teams that use the academy a lot. So congratulations for Real Sociedad.
And their manager, Imanol Alguacil.
Real Ale! Ira Basiarte! Betiego Gogara!
Yeah, he went mental. He went mental. So he gave a normal press conference, and then, he showed his other self. So he started singing one of those Real Sociedad chants, and it was beautiful. I mean, this is a man that has made a lot of sacrifices this year because after the game, he admitted that, he is not even having dinner with his family and children who are teenagers, just to avoid getting COVID-19, because his children go to university or to school. So he's making a lot of sacrifices too. And he doesn't want to miss a single day of work. He knows that this season for Real Sociedad is very important. They've been in the Europa League. They could still qualify for the Champions League. So, fair play to him. He's a local manager. And, it cannot be a better feeling than winning a title with the team you are a fan of. And that happens, unfortunately, with the Real Sociedad players and the Real Sociedad manager. Like 16 or 17 or 20 members of the squad, they are from there, from Guipúzcoa.
Very nice. This game had been held over, of course, to allow the chance for Basque fans to enjoy the two teams in action. As it turned out, they still weren't allowed to enter the Sánchez Pizjuán, although one or two, I believe, did check into that hotel that has rooms that look onto the pitch there in Seville. Meanwhile, huge Athletic crowds in Bilbao. And I wanted to ask, actually, that guy who tried crowd surfing off a traffic light, how is he?
Have no idea, really. Have no idea. It happened next to my parents' house, actually. That traffic light is quite high, next to Pozas, the street that takes you to San Mamés, to our ground. So I don't know how the boy is, but just to explain it, he basically jumped as if he was in a concert. He thought that somebody, a group of people, would just stop in the way of a parachute. He's falling onto the ground. Nobody stopped him, and basically he fell from, 2.5-3 meters on the floor on concrete.
Up.
But he seemed to be all right. But I think that probably on Sunday when he woke up, he was feeling terrible.
Yeah, for all sorts of reasons, Alvaro. Yeah. Well, you get another crack at the Copa del Rey, as you mentioned, a week on Saturday against Barcelona. Briefly, are you optimistic?
Not much. But, it would be fantastic to win it because every time we talk about Athletic Club Bilbao, the fans, especially us who are under 40, you know, 1984 for anybody means a book from George Orwell, but for us it means the last time we won a real title, the Spanish Cup. So, you know, all the memories that I have from Athletic Club Bilbao are not mine, are somebody else's, are my family telling me, oh yeah, you were there when we won the title, but it was 8 months, 9 months, so those memories are not mine, and it probably happened to many supporters of Real Sociedad who have managed to renovate their emotional memories, all those who are under 35. So I really hope that we win it this time, but I think it's very difficult because Barcelona is in a great run right now and they are strongly favourites for that final on the 17th of April.
Well, best of luck, Alvaro. Next up, let's hear about Bayern PSG.
4, 4, 5, 10.
The Masters at Augusta, and Paddy Power are paying even more places than usual. So you get money on your each-way bet if your golfer finishes in the top 10 places. That's right, the top 10. Paddy Power. Online exclusive. Pre-tournament each-way bets on winner market at 1/5 odds. Dead heat rules and T's and C's apply. 18+. BeGambleAware.org.
Shh, you too.
Oh, sorry.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Jimmy, yes, scored! Odesten! Come on! Und das ausgerechnet haben Sie gesagt. Die Bayern führen!
Wednesday in the Champions League, it's another exciting reunion. Bayern Munich and Paris Saint-Germain, last year's Champions League finalists, of course. They meet in Munich. Jules.
Yes.
Right. Okay. You're tense. I understand.
It's not so much tense because...
Resigned?
So Lewandowski
mind
gets
games,
injured.
Mind games.
Nah, Lewandowski gets injured, which like Kylian Mbappe said on Sunday morning on French TV, it's a good thing if you're a PSG fan. It's better to face Bayern without Lewandowski than Bayern with Lewandowski. Then PSG lose themselves Verratti. And to be fair, there's a case to say that Verratti is more important in a way to PSG than Lewandowski is to Bayern, in the sense that they will still create a lot of chances and there will be people in Bayern's team that will take those chances. But for PSG, without Verratti, the lack of creativity is pretty brutal, suddenly. And
why can nobody else, I don't know, Di Maria or whoever, why can nobody else in that Paris Saint-Germain team perform something of his kind of... Because he wasn't doing it himself. He wasn't playing in that role until Pochettino arrived.
Yeah. The only one really, the closest one in the squad is Rafinha. But for some reason, Poch is not a great fan of him. He hasn't played much since Pochettino arrived. He had COVID as well at some point, like last month. So I think maybe that's been an issue. But it's just no one else has that profile of variety to keep the ball under pressure, and against Bayern's press is so important. Who can somehow find a way out of having three players behind him? He's far more efficient in the way he plays than he was maybe 2 or 3 years ago, where he still was doing silly passes and silly dribbles in his own half or his own box even. So he's gained a lot of maturity, and without him, especially in that new role that Pochettino had for him, it's very difficult for PSG, as we saw, especially when Neymar is not match fit, which he is right now. And when he's not match fit, he tends to force his game a little bit too much, and that has a counter effect to the PSG team than he should.
Is there any chance that Verratti will be available on Wednesday?
No. He has to self-isolate. Yeah, and Florenzi now on Monday was announced to have tested positive for COVID as well, which again, considering behind Florenzi is either young Colin Dagba, who's not very good, or Thilo Kehrer, who is even worse. I don't know who's going to fill out right back, but certainly won't be as good as what Florenzi would have brought going forward, especially. So again, that's another worry for PSG.
Okay, Bayern without Lewandowski getting a huge win over their nearest rivals in the Bundesliga title race this weekend. Paris Saint-Germain, meanwhile, up against their nearest rivals, Lille, and losing potentially a very costly defeat indeed, because not only are Lille now 3 points clear, but also they're going to lose Neymar after his stoppage time red card, Jules.
Yeah, which he does when he's, again, not much fit, when he's coming back from an injury. He always needs a bit of time to get back to his sort of best or near best level. And he tends to lose his head a little bit as well when things are not going his way, which was the case on Saturday. They defended well on him, Lille. They go into his head very quickly. He should have got sent off on his first yellow, to be fair, when he pushed the Lille captain in the face. And then got a second yellow just before the end. And then he wanted to fight the Lille defender in the tunnel and in the dressing room. And there's fears right now that instead of a one-match ban, which is usually what you get when you get sent off for two yellows, he would get more because he's been sent off so many times and always for the same thing that he could easily get a two or three-match ban.
Wow. So they're 3 points behind Lille with seven games to go. Verratti's got COVID. Neymar's going to be banned for a bit. You've got Monaco as well creeping up behind. What are they, 1 point below Paris Saint-Germain? You've got Bayern Munich next in the Champions League. This is shaping up to be a brilliant start for Pochettino, eh?
Yeah, I mean, I feel for him a little bit because he hasn't been easy, really. I mean, half of the squad, maybe not half, but had COVID since Pochettino arrived. I mean, we were saying with Raf on Saturday when we saw each other at Emirates, that's the second time that Verratti got COVID since the end of January, which is exceptional, really. So he's been a worry. There's been a lot of injuries. They've played every 3 days. No time to work on anything. No time to prepare. Yeah, we've seen them doing good things like the away game in Barcelona, the away game in Lyon, where they were really good and very Pochettino-esque in the way they pressed and the intensity and all the energy, the high energy that they showed. And then at times they're dreadful, like they were on Saturday against Nantes and Lorient. All those games they lost already under Pochettino.
Mm. The second bout of COVID presumably coming from the current hotspot that the Italians are experiencing with their national side. There's been about 5 or 6 cases that have come out of the recent training camp. If only someone had suggested that playing international football, gathering people from different countries at this time of a worldwide outbreak was not a great idea anyway.
Yeah.
Bayern Munich, Rafa. How come they didn't miss Lewandowski then against RB Leipzig?
Well, they did miss him, but they were able to compensate because the players behind Lewandowski were all available and all playing reasonably well, especially Thomas Müller, who had another really, really big game for Bayern and is arguably Bayern's most important player, even more so than Lewandowski, with the way that he kind of runs the team, keeps everybody motivated, organizes things on the pitch and acts like a coach for the rest of the team. It was his assist that enabled Leon Goretzka to score the only goal against Leipzig. Bayern spent a lot of the game defending, defended reasonably well, conceded quite a few chances, but kind of just had a bit too much for Leipzig. Leipzig team that didn't quite have the same quality that Bayern had, and that was really the difference rather than tactical. So Erik-Maxim Choupo-Moting is going to run, lead the line.
So another again. Paris Saint-Germain old boy against Paris Saint-Germain. What happened last time?
last time, of course, Kingsley Coman scored a goal. I think Kingsley Coman will start as well. And of course, Alphonso Davies, who couldn't play, he was suspended, will be back. And possibly Jérôme Boateng as well. He was also suspended in the Leipzig game. So there is a good chance that we'll see a fairly full-strength Bayern, with the exception of Lewandowski. And I think, rightly or wrongly, I think the anticipation or the sense in Munich is that they should be able to do it. I don't think that it'd have the same confidence if it was Manchester City or even Liverpool at the moment. But with PSG, there is a sense that over two legs, Bayern should do it. However, Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, who I spoke to, the Bayern chief executive, about a week ago, made the point that in the final, PSG might have actually been the better team. And if it hadn't been for Manuel Neuer, the game could have very well finished differently. So I think maybe the public perception is slightly more optimistic than internally, where they still, I think, are very respectful of the challenge that PSG present.
Mm. 7 wins in a row now for Bayern in all competitions. They've also scored in 62 consecutive matches in all competitions. Where could it all go wrong, though, for the Bavarians against Paris Saint-Germain, do you think?
It could go wrong because Bayern, as you know, as we've talked about, play a high line, and when it's not quite right and the intensity isn't perhaps, and the organisation isn't perhaps as good as it was through large spells of last season, then it leaves you with huge gaps. And Leipzig did a lot of good work playing through that press, especially in the second half. And you had a lot of moments where half of the Bayern team were out of the game and had to track back really quickly. And there were people running at the Bayern defense. I think Bayern might have to moderate their game a little bit and be perhaps slightly more measured in that approach. But of course, Hansi Flick has shown very few indications that he wants to do that. The one thing that might work in Bayern's favor in that sense is that Erik-Maxim Choupo-Moting is perhaps not as happy being involved in a pressing game as much as Lewandowski is in a more natural way. So maybe Bayern will be a little bit more restrained in that sense and hope that they can play a bit more from their positional game.
Jules, before we move on from Liga related issues, Callum Sally would like to know, how good is Romain Parot? And are the rumours he might be going to Leeds true?
So I don't know about the rumours, but he's had a really good season in a team that has been playing well all season, but not really getting the result that I think their performances deserved. But they certainly have a few players in that team, like Romain Fèvre as well, the right winger, left-footed winger, who is very, very talented too, who I think a lot of English clubs are really keen on. So it's certainly one to keep an eye on.
Okay, well, I have more Twitter questions later on. Do you think Lille, because we did kind of sail past them to talk about PSG's clash with Bayern, but Lille now 3 points clear. Can they hang on?
Yeah, I think they can. They have one more big game to play against Lyon, who will also face Monaco, by the way. So Lyon might still have a big role to play, although they're a bit behind now in terms of the title challenge and title race, but they still have a big role, might have a big role to play. And could do a favour to PSG if they beat both Lille and Monaco, which is, of course, possible. So we'll have to see. But Lille certainly look really, really strong. What's funny is that before the international break, they lost to Nîmes at home and they were terrible. And then 3 weeks on, they go to Paris and have this tactical masterclass where they're so efficient in the two boxes, defend really well, game plan perfect from Christophe Galtier. So it's hard to tell, but they certainly look very, very good right now, I have to say. Mm.
And as we mentioned, Monaco very much in the mix there as well.
And James, just to finish on Ligue 1, I've got the nice story of the weekend. It's a young goalkeeper who made his debut for Saint-Étienne called Etienne Green, who was born in Colchester, whose father is English, hence the name Green, which is obviously a great coincidence.
Nominative determinism.
Yeah, that he plays for a team, obviously, whose nickname is The Green, Les Verts, oui. And whose parents called him Etienne as a tribute to Saint-Étienne, the city where he grew up. And he's been at the club for 11 years, he's 20, made his debut. They won 2-0 and he saved the penalty in the last minute of his first ever game as a professional goalkeeper. So well done to Etienne Green.
OK, also on Wednesday, Porto-Chelsea. Both legs of this game are going to be taking place in Seville. Chelsea fresh off the back of their first defeat under Thomas Tuchel. Porto, who put Juve out in the last 16, come in off a 2-1 victory, their fourth in a row, actually, this time this weekend against Santa Clara. They'll be without a couple of key players, Mehdi Taremi and Sergio Oliveira, who's actually their top scorer in Europe this season. But any thoughts on this? Porto's are very good at shutting teams down. Chelsea, not so good at actually scoring goals. What's your take, anybody?
Well, it's great for Porto that Pepe is fit again because he was training on his own during the international break. But maybe this is as far as Porto can get. I mean, let's not forget that a couple of goals that Porto scored against Juventus were Juventus mistakes. You remember, of course, Cristiano Ronaldo just turning his back on a free kick. But also Betancourt lost a key ball at Dragao that obviously made the Juventus have to trail in the game there in Portugal. So I think that this time Chelsea, despite their inconsistencies in defence that we saw, especially the other day against West Bromwich Albion, Chelsea should come as the favourite for this tie.
Okay, very good. Well, next up, let's get a quick check on Serie A and a word or two on the Europa League.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power.
One in the eye for those who thought Juventus and Napoli wouldn't be in action still during the quarterfinals of the Champions League. They'll be playing on Wednesday night, admittedly not in the actual Champions League. They're having that game that they were meant to do back in October. But you may recall Napoli couldn't go or advised not to go because they had lots of positive results for COVID tests. They were then deducted points for it, but then that was overturned and now they're actually playing the game. As chance would have it, this time around, the game has been scheduled at a particularly delicate moment for Juventus, because Saturday they dropped points again. They were beaten by Benevento before the international break. Now in the Turin derby, they drew 2-2 with Davide Nicola's revitalised Torino. And they're now hanging on to fourth spot on goal difference alone. And guess who's behind them? Napoli, who they face on Wednesday, etc. Anybody catch Napoli's 7-goal thriller with Crotone on Saturday?
Woof. I did it for BT Sport, the score.
Did you? Nice.
Yeah, I watched it all. Well, I mean, they
can't defend, can they?
They were so much better, but if Maksimović and Manolas don't make the mistakes that they made to bring Crotone back in the game, I think they could easily have won this one 4-0. But I think the character they showed for Di Lorenzo to score that winning goal, 15 minutes before the end, was really good. And certainly the momentum that they have now going into this Juve game, which is the complete opposite for Juve, who look like they lost all sort of confidence individually and collectively, is massive. And I want Gattuso to do well because I don't think Di Laurentiis have treated him that well this season. So it'd be great for him to finish top four ahead of Juve.
Okay. How impressed were you with Simin Nwankwo?
Oh, I think he's great. I think he's really good.
This fellow, he scored 8 goals in his last 5 games. Not only that, but in that period, Crotone have only scored 12 goals themselves. So he has scored, 2/3 of all their goals.
Yeah. And he's on 15, I think, in Serie A for the season. He's 28, so it's not like, I wish we could say, oh, he's the next big thing because he's so young and this and that. But he's been fantastic. And again, there's nothing that he does that he doesn't, he's not trying to do things that he can't do, but he's very efficient, everything he does. And it would be hard for them to stay up, but I think it would be great to stay up. And if they don't, he will go to a club that is still in Serie A in the summer. There's no doubt.
Well, that's Crotone. Napoli now taking on a Juve team who are outside the top two for the first time since 2011. Extraordinary stat that. They haven't been outside of the top two positions in Serie A since this incredible title winning run started all the way back in 2011. There's word that Massimiliano Allegri was back in talks with the Agnellis over the Easter weekend about returning to a role with Juve, who are in a slightly difficult situation. I think we'll see what happens on Wednesday night to the incumbent, Andrea Pirlo. They may fare better because Juve struggle particularly with teams that know how to defend, like Porto, for example, in the last 16, and indeed Torino. And Napoli, defensively, not so great. Jules?
And also, I think what maybe is an indication of what's wrong at Juve is the suspension that McKennie, Arthur and Paulo Dybala had for this game against Torino in the derby because they breached the COVID regulations and rules by having a party or a dinner, depending on who you're listening to. And I don't know, I think Weston McKennie is a really intelligent guy. I just can't believe people still do this right now after a year of lockdown everywhere in the world. It's crazy.
Wise word. Up top, in Serie A, it's all over by the shouting. Inter on Saturday got their 9th straight victory. It was 1-0 against Bologna. Romelu Lukaku with his 20th goal of the season, second straight season he's hit 20 or more goals. And with Milan drawing with Samp, with a lovely lob by that man Quagliarella, the Nerazzurri are now 8 points clear. A shout out to Spezia's Daniele Verdi for the outstanding overhead kick he pulled off against Lazio in a 2-1 defeat for the Ligurians.
Ancora Jasil cross per Verde! È un gol assurdo, surreale, immaginifico quello di Verde. 1-1.
And with that, let's move on to the Europa League. 4 games coming up in their quarterfinals on Thursday. Dinamo Zagreb will face Villarreal. Ajax are up against Roma, the last Italian side in European competition. Granada take on Man United, and Arsenal are up against Slavia Prague, where Andre Kudela is now facing a UEFA inquiry over what he said to Glenn Kamara in the previous round. Unfortunately, this is a very similar case that's just happened this weekend in La Liga, Alvaro, no, with Valencia's Mukhtar Diakabi saying that he was abused by Cadiz's Juan Cala in the game, which was suspended when Valencia left the field in protest, but then started again with Cala continuing to play, but Diakabi not.
Yes, absolutely. Diakabi was devastated and he was not ready to play. It's difficult to believe, and I don't want to break here the presumption of innocence, of course not. But Diakabi looked like somebody who had been like badly insulted. And yeah, basically Valencia returned onto the pitch because the referee told them that if they didn't, they could face even point deduction. And right. Since Valencia didn't know whether there would be actually like some television evidence of what Juan Cala said to Diakabi, decided to return onto the pitch. But the truth is that maybe Valencia lost an opportunity, really, to make this claim a little bit bigger and not to return onto the pitch because, yeah, you know, at the end of the day, if your player has been insulted and if he's not in the mood to keep on playing, why should you be in the mood to keep on playing? You know, I think that Valencia lost a little bit of an opportunity there to stick to the player, even though it's not that they don't support him, not at all, but they fear to face pointed actions or any sort of, you know, repercussion, negative repercussion. But one thing has to be said here. Juan Cala is going to speak on Tuesday. He's going to give a press conference and finally we'll hear his version of the story.
Okay, interesting, because his face was a picture through the protests and not an especially convincing one. But as you say, the presumption of innocence for anybody is essential. The referee, as yet, I don't think has confirmed that. I think they said that both teams decided to come out and play again. But Valencia's position was very much that the referee told them that since they hadn't heard the comment themselves and since Cala himself had denied it, that the two teams would be required to come back out. Valencia ended up losing the game anyway, 2-1.
Yeah, and very quickly, there are different ways of seeing this. If Valencia reports this, files a complaint form, and at the end it is deemed that the accusation is real and that the insult is very serious, a player could face up to 2 to 5 years of his footballing license withdrawal. So that's quite a thing. So that's why I believe that probably Cala won't accept that he say that, even if he did, because the repercussion that he could face is pretty heavy. Well, in the best possible scenario for him, I think that he will be missing 4 games and he will, of course, face a financial fine as well.
Well, as I say, Europa League quarterfinals coming up on Thursday. Ajax-Roma is going to be interesting. Arsenal-Slavia-Prague, potentially, you know, given the Gunners and that. Dinamo Zagreb with huge game for them after putting Spurs out against Villarreal. And what about, Alvaro, Granada in the second division not long ago, now playing for a European semi-final against Man United? Woof.
Yeah. It is pretty much unbelievable what they have done, and the thing is that they want more. I think that the best thing that can happen to Granada and the best thing that Granada can be happy about is the fact that they don't have any pressure here. Of course, Manchester United is a better team than Granada, but maybe the last precedent between Manchester United and a Spanish team is not very valid because Real Sociedad plays on free-flowing football that Manchester United can take advantage of. But Granada are different. They are solid. They are many of the players very experienced as well. A little bit tricky sometimes, you know. So I think that this game, I wouldn't say that Granada is favorite for this game. Not at all. But it's true that if anything, they're going to play this game with the appetite and more so with the professional seriousness needed to play a team like Manchester United. It's a top season for Granada.
All right. Well, it's going to be fascinating to see how that turns out on Thursday. Before we wrap it up, a couple of items from the postbag. Rafa, these are for you. Let's have a little look. Q says, any exciting takeaways, Rafa, from the Berlin derby between Hertha and Union?
I think any exciting takeaways would have been doner kebabs because in a sporting sense.
Or a large
James,
sausage, perhaps.
Yeah, maybe. In terms of the on-pitch fare, it was rather tough to digest because it was a pretty atrocious game. 1-1 draw. Of course, a derby without the fans is never that exciting, but the football was pretty bad. Union started well enough. Hertha recovered in the second half, got a draw that they can reasonably be happy with, but it just shows you just how poor they are that, you know, a draw and a point that will help them avoid relegation was seen as a success. Pal Dardai, the coach, being very, very unhappy though with this team.
I see. Alex Cooney's also got a question for you. It relates to something we were talking about earlier on, Dortmund and their transfer policy. Alex asks, do Dortmund now regret their stance on Sancho last summer since they're going to drop into the Europa League? Their team is really unbalanced and definitely needed an elite goalkeeper. Ooh, also, says Alex, can you highlight how great Wolfsburg and Frankfurt have been? Silva and Kostic especially are fantastic.
Yes, I mean, Frankfurt deserve a lot of praise. They've really been playing so well, especially in the second half of the season. Kostic has come back to his very best. Jovic and Silva is a fantastic combination up front. And it's really fun watching this Frankfurt team play. Wolfsburg may be slightly more pragmatic. Their game is based on defense. They don't concede almost any goals. And they find ways of winning games. And they have this consistency and are really tough to beat. So, yes, we should praise them as well. But Frankfurt are, I think, the neutrals' darlings, if you will. As far as Sancho is concerned, I don't think Dortmund do regret not selling. I think they would have liked to see Sancho have a better first half of the season because he's been very good recently before getting injured, but took maybe a couple of months getting over the fact that this move didn't happen. So I don't think it can easily be said absolutely no regrets whatsoever because of the financial implications and the sporting situation. But I think Dortmund would probably make the decision again, feeling that they shouldn't have sold him for a figure that was below their own valuation. So I think you can't really blame them for sticking to that price.
Excellent. Well, we've got a big midweek of action ahead of us and then all sorts of excitement to next weekend as well, the Clásico and other delights too. We'll be back next Tuesday with added James Horncastle to discuss all of that. So do hope you'll be tuning in then. Listener for now, many, many thanks to Rafa, to Alvaro, and to Jules, and thanks to producer Charlie and you, listener. Go on. And we'll speak to you soon. Cheerio.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and follow us at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of The Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify, and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on the Athletic app. The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.